21. Gate of Damnation.
Yeltas prefer a cold climate, as their thick fur doesn't shed. You can find them in the far reaches of the world, like the Abadyn Wasteland or the Carter Wastes.
From Kulvinar Bryum's Bestiary for Conjurers, page 102. The footfalls of conjurations large and small filled the crystal halls that were not Tardalim. Except for the conjurations, Amandal and Felinio were alone. They had passed several other groups who had gone their own ways, searching other corridors and chambers.
"So, what do you think this place is?"
Felinia asked, her tone playful. "More teasing," Amandal mused. He stared at her for a moment before answering. "A distraction." He glanced to a nearby doorway. It was like the others they had passed, enormous and open. "Something to deter the faint of heart."
"Faint of heart?" Felinia asked, chuckling. "I don't think the faint of heart could make their way here."
Amandal shrugged. "You never know." That evoked another mirthful outburst, and Felinia studied him with yearning eyes. "I have you now," he thought, pleased. What had turned the tide? Had it been the Yeltas, or that strange plant-like creature? Perhaps both.
"So, a distraction."
Felinia took in a deep breath.
"From what, pray tell, Mr. Aramian?"
"Who knows?" Amandal glanced over his shoulder. His menagerie trailed behind him. Seven Cisthern, the two Yeltas, a troll, he wished he had more of those, the four Quintashals, an earthen giant, and several other earthen conjurations. "What else should I conjure?" Amandal wondered. His mind turned to his dreams, recalling the halls of Tardalim, or so the old codger had called them. If only those corridors were larger. Felinia had voiced concern about Amandal's dreams, wondering if they were warnings. He considered the implications and wished he could summon a Gangolin. If he were to face certain danger, then a Gangolin would prove a fitting means of protection. One of the behemoths might fit in these crystal halls, but not the corridors Amandal had seen in his dreams.
"You're no fun," Felinia said.
"What?" Amandal asked, turning from his conjurations. Felinia smiled wryly.
"You should have been paying attention."
She winked and then turned to a nearby doorway. The opening was three stories tall, the only one of its size that Amandal had seen. They had passed other doorways that were seven or eight stories tall, as well as some of human size. "I suppose it won't hurt to look," Amandal thought, following Felinia. "Wait," he commanded his conjurations, and the footfalls ceased. The space beyond the doorway was large and empty, like the other exposed rooms he and Felinia had passed. This room, however, was lined with crystallized racks and shelves, with rows of racks all throughout the room.
"Weapon racks?" Amandal wondered. "But where were the weapons?"
"And what does this look like to you?" Felinia asked, weaving around a row of empty racks. They looked tall enough to hold phanisars or channeling staffs, weapons used by mages to focus their magic. A mage wielding a channeling staff could send an arcane orb flying faster than an arrow or a crossbow bolt. "An armory," Amandal said, "but who knows if it ever held any weapons?"
"And here I never pegged you as a skeptic,"
Felinia chuckled, moving farther into the supposed armory. Amandal smiled, pleased. The teasing had increased. Good, he thought, and walked in the direction opposite to Felinia. "Think about it," he said. "What use would a reliquary have for an armory?" A laugh left Felinia's lips.
"To store weapons?"
"But why?" Felinia groaned. She was undoubtedly rolling her eyes. Amandal let the silence hang, but Ildan's voice soon carried through the doorway.
"There you are!"
Amandal peeked around a rack in search of his friend. One of Ildan's illusions hovered within the doorway,
taking in the supposed armory in a sweeping glance. "Have you found anything?" Ilden asked.
"No,"
Felenia answered from across the room. "Neither have we," Ilden said, sounding disappointed. "Nor is Jacob's group, or Fendar's. I wonder if someone else pillaged this place before us."
"Amandal thinks this place is a distraction,"
Felenia shouted. The illusion perked up, intrigued. Amandal simply nodded. "The Tevisrolls are not here," he said matter-of-factly. "What we're seeking lies within those white stone halls."
"White?"
Ilden asked.
"Like that circle in the far wall of the main room?"
"Circle in the main room?" Amandal wondered. He hadn't paid much attention to that grand space. He was too busy summoning his conjurations.
"Wasn't that circle metallic?" Felenia asked. "It looked too shiny to be stone."
That has to be it, Amandal thought. Whatever that circle was, it undoubtedly led to the actual Tardalim. "Let's go back," Amandal said, stepping toward the doorway. Soon Amandal was back in the hall with Ilden's illusion hovering beside him. Felinia's hurried footfalls carried into the hallway, and soon she too was beside Amandal.
"Defying more orders?" Ilden asked. "At this rate, you're going to be owing the expedition coin."
"I can pay it," Amandal said, glancing to the illusion, but was drawn to one of those reliefs protruding from the crystalline wall. Amandal and Felinia had passed many of those reliefs. Each had its mouth open, mouths that were hollow. But why hollow? Kalamir picked his way around the supplies deposited within the enormous welcoming room of Tardalim. At least he supposed it was the welcoming room.
But what else could it be?
He wondered, studying the towering pillars. Why had the builders of this reliquary needed to craft a space so large? What purpose did it serve?
"The last of the squads is away," Dardel said, weaving around a cluster of packs.
"Good," Kalamir said, still eyeing the pillars. "Have you seen Mistress Rudal or Lieutenant Virain?"
Dardel shook his head.
"No, sir."
Kalamir compressed his lips, not amused. Where had they gone? Both had kept a fair distance ahead of the expedition, but Kalamir had lost track of them once he started doling out assignments.
"Have any of you seen them?"
he asked the others, the members of squads 1 and 2. None answered in the affirmative.
"Damn you women, where have you gone off to?"
First Mr. Aramian and now the Mindalarnians. Who else was going to defy his command? Setting his jaw, Kalamir took the enormous room in with a sweeping glance. Light shone from the far end of the room, coming from that metallic dome.
"When did that start glowing?"
"I don't know, sir," Hevesir said. "I don't recall it glowing when we first entered."
Neither did Kalamir. He had noticed the starkness of the dome, but paid little attention to it. Perhaps that was a mistake. He had made too many of those on this godforsaken expedition.
"Dardel, come with me,"
Kalamir said, stepping away from the supplies.
"Hevesir, continue preparing the camp."
Both soldiers answered the command in unison, Dardel joining Kalamir and Hevesir barking his own orders. Wary but intrigued, Kalamir quickened his pace to a near jog. His longsword clanked against his armor with each step. Dardel was no less noisy. The metal dome across the room had become more luminous than before. Strange symbols, like those he had seen in the gatehouse, glowed a pale green. There was also a luminous ring around the dome, lining 3/4 of its circumference. 2 feminine figures stood beneath the dome, facing the crystalline wall.
"The Mindalarnians," Dardel said.
Kalamir nodded.
What were they doing? "You are holding back," he thought. But why?
And what importance had this dome to the plundering of the reliquary? Kalamir's displeasure quickened his stride. Kalamir and Dardel were no more than 200 finials away when the light on the metallic dome winked out, followed by an angry cry.
"That sounds like Mistress Rudal."
A moment later, the light shone once again from the symbols upon the dome.
The ring of light, however, was only a fraction of what it was, no more than a seventh or eighth of the dome's circumference. Why had the light changed? Mistress Rudall and Lieutenant Verain were focused on a spot in the crystallized wall. The Mandalorian scholar was fidgeting with something, but Calamir couldn't determine what it was. He clenched his teeth, readying himself for a conflict with the Mandalorians.
"Mistress Rudall!"
She answered with an angered grunt. The lieutenant, however, turned to face Calamir and Dardel. She looked rather surprised, perhaps even guilty.
"What are you hiding?" Calamir wondered, passing beneath the dome.
It protruded a good 20 finials from the wall. More light shone from the dome, and the ring of light around its circumference spread, though not as much as before. The scholar cocked her head toward the lieutenant, whispering something Calamir couldn't quite hear. Calamir glanced to Dardel, but the man shook his head.
"Commander," Lieutenant Verain said, stepping away from the wall, "what can I do for you?"
She settled into a straight-backed stance, as if standing at attention.
"Oh, don't pull that with me," Calamir thought. "What are you doing?"
She glanced to the scholar, but raised her chin. Posturing? That was never a good sign.
"Opening the reliquary's vault," she said.
"A vault?" Calamir wondered, looking up to the dome.
More of the symbols had become lit, and the ring had spread farther. That line of light around the dome was now the same distance as when he had first noticed it.
"Really?" Dardel asked. "A vault was never mentioned in any of our meetings."
Lieutenant Verain didn't reply to the passive accusation. She was hiding something. A tenuous silence hung between them all. The only sounds in the air were the faint scraping of metal, like the churning of a cog coming from near Mistress Rudall. What was she doing? Calamir sidestepped, narrowing his eyes. The Mandalorian scholar was standing in front of a metal circle in the wall. Calamir sidestepped again to get a better look. The metal circle looked like a miniature version of the dome overhead.
"Don't interrupt her,"
the lieutenant warned, glancing up to the dome.
"She's on the second to last sequence."
"Of what?" Dardel asked. The Mandalorian lieutenant didn't answer, but looked back to the dome overhead. A triumphant cheer left Mistress Rudall's lips, and more of those strange symbols became luminous. The ring of light was almost complete.
"Almost there,"
the scholar muttered, tension in her voice. Brow raised, Calamir eyed the miniaturized dome in front of Mistress Rudall. Rings that she had not touched were spinning. Was she trying to align those strange symbols?
"There!"
she exclaimed, jubilant. A click sounded from that miniature dome. The scholar turned from the crystal wall, smiling.
"Do you really think they would keep the Tivis Rolls lying about in plain sight?"
"Do you think omitting details was wise?" Dardel asked.
Mistress Rudall glanced at Dardel, her lips twisted in a snarl, but then focused on Calamir.
"I suggest you recall the others."
Calamir studied her for a moment, then focused on the dome. Each of the symbols upon its surface was glowing, and that ring of light now wrapped around its entire circumference. A low hum resonated from the glistening metal, and then grooves appeared within the dome's smooth sections, swirling from its apex to the circumference. In a flash of movement, the dome became a circular opening, wreathed only by that ring of light.
"Looks like we'll need barge and ramps," said Lieutenant Verain. "Best we—"
A high-pitched screech filled the room, followed by the rushing of water. Startled by a high-pitched screech, Morjadayan frantically searched the gorge. The roar of gushing water muffled the frazzled questions of Squad 3, while a blinding white flash erupted from the gatehouse. Morjadayan shielded his eyes while the gushing water sound grew louder. Something pressed against his boot, something wet and cold.
"Flowing water?" Morjadayan wondered, blinking.
But what happened to the barge he had—
"It's gone," he thought.
He could no longer sense any of the barriers he had put on himself or the rest of Squad 3. Still blinking, Morjadayan struggled to see through the spots plaguing his vision. From what little he could see, the ground was shifting.
How was that possible?
Was that a dispel? One of the soldiers asked. Where did those beasts go? Another asked, his question followed by splashing noises. Mojadayan spun, spraying water as he turned to where Amandel had left his conjured cisterns, but the wolf-like creatures were nowhere to be found. If that light had been a dispel, the creatures would have been roaming aimlessly. A dispel wouldn't have caused them to vanish.
What happened to the bridge? A soldier cried.
A commotion filled the air as Mojadayan glanced to where the bridge should have been. It, like the conjurations, was gone. The last of the spots faded, and Mojadayan focused on the floor. Flowing water covered the balcony, surging toward the empty spot on the railing where the bridge had stood. But where was the water coming from? Gushing water roared all around, even from the crystal hallway beyond the doors. Water flowed down the walls in thick streams. Mojadayan followed their course to the reliefs of those draconic heads. Every single relief on the balcony and within the hallway was spewing water. Mojadayan's eyes widened in horror. Had someone triggered a trap? Shaking off his fears, Mojadayan uttered an incantation to muster his inverted barjan. Hopefully, he could stop up the holes before there was too much flooding. He was partway through the incantation, but no barjan was manifesting. A spike of dread pierced his heart, but Mojadayan kept uttering the incantation. He finished, but no barjan formed.
How?
He muttered with a gasp. Had that white flash somehow prevented magic from manifesting within the gorge? Besides that prison castle and the Kingdom of Loss, he had never heard of an area where one could not access the channels of power.
I should warn the others, he thought.
But what good would that do? Without the bridge, they would be trapped within this crystal tomb. Water splashed around Amandel, stirred by his conjuration's footsteps. The roar of falling water filled the crystalline hall from every direction. Each of those hollow-mouthed reliefs gushed water that flowed down the walls and pooled all across the enormous hallway. After only a matter of seconds, the water had already reached above the soles of Amandel's boots.
Never a dull moment on this trip, he thought, shaking his head.
First the Noctili, then the perils of the crystal caverns, and now this. Ildin and Felinia were debating the cause of the flooding, but Amandel ignored them. The flooding was the least of their concerns. What worried him more was the dismissal of his conjurations on the balcony. Amandel had sensed a flash of light, then nothing. Was it a dispel or something else?
You need to hurry,
a voice said, as if whispered on the wind.
Finish conjuring your forces.
What? Amandel started, looking about. Not paying attention? Ildin asked, a twinge of sarcasm in his voice. Amandel glanced to his friend's illusion. Didn't either of you hear that? Ildin shook his head.
A premonition, Amandel?
Felinia asked, narrowing her eyes thoughtfully.
I don't know,
Amandel said, setting his jaw. That voice sounded familiar, like that of the old codger from his dreams. But he was only a figment of Amandel's imagination, wasn't he?
Perhaps I am going mad.
Well, I'm going ahead, Ildin said. The illusion zipped down the hall and disappeared. Where is he going? Amandel asked.
To see where the water is coming from,
Felinia replied, pointing to the ground. Amandel glanced to his feet. Though there were constant ripples in the water, a steady but slow current flowed toward the main room.
It has to be going somewhere, Felinia said warily. Maybe the gorge?
She studied Amandel for a moment.
What did you hear?
A behest. To keep conjuring.
Then you'd best obey.
Then Felinia began an incantation, mustering her own illusory magic. Ildin's illusion zipped around a corner, entering the enormous space with the pillars and the metal dome. The dome, however, was gone, and in its place, a hole.
What happened? Ildin turned his attention back to the water which flowed toward the corridor leading to the gorge. Why out there? He wondered, then sent the illusion flying toward the gatehouse. Waterfalls lined the corridor's walls, each flowing from those dragon-headed reliefs. It was a beautiful sight, but a treacherous one, too. As the illusion approached the entrance, Ildin fixed his vision beyond the open doors. The water was flowing across the balcony and toward a hole where the bridge should have been. Where did it go? He muttered. Where did what go? Asked a soldier from Squad 13. Ildin had been reassigned to that squad for helping Amandal. Ildin didn't reply, but kept his illusion flying. The replica of himself flew through the doorway, but as it cleared the threshold, it vanished. Like that blackness, Ildin thought, recalling the abysmal veil barring them from accessing the gatehouse from atop the gorge. That blackness had simply dismissed Ildin's illusion like a dispel.
Care to enlighten us, Ildin?
Asked the squad leader, a stout woman named Nadra. Ildin spread his hands. The bridge is gone, he said, and the water is flowing toward the gorge.
What does that mean?
A soldier asked. Nadra gave the man an impatient glance.
That means we have time before we drown.
We have to get out of here, cried another soldier.
I don't see how, Ildin muttered, setting his jaw.
What about those Borgianists? The first soldier asked. Can't they make a ramp to the gatehouse? Or stop up the water? Another cried.
Ildin glanced to the first man and pursed his lips. I doubt that will work, he thought. The others voiced their own concerns about the situation. If illusions were torn apart, Barjan probably wouldn't last long either, and judging by the vastness of the halls and the number of reliefs, the Barjanists would have quite the time stopping the water.
Quit whining, Nadra barked. Let's get back to Kalamir. The commander will see us through this.